This week's parsha is Parshas Vayakel. And Vayakel sort of goes back and describes all of the chalakim, all of the sections of the Mishkan, and how whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded Moshe Rabbeinu to command Bezalel and his team to construct, how everything was done. And we just want to go back a little bit today and talk about a very important yesod that we take from the Arin, and more specifically from the Kruvim atop the Arin. The Pasuk says, going back to Parshas Truma, Perek Chaf Hei Pasuk Chaf, V'hayu HaKruvim Parsei Chnafayim L'malo, that the Kruvim, these two figures that were atop the Arin, were spreading their wings on high. Parsei Chnafayim L'malo. And the Pasuk continues, Upneim ish el achiv, that their faces were turned one to another. So we have two separate actions taking place with the Kruvim, with these two golden figures. One of them was that they had a wingspan that was very high. It was going up. Their wings were spread high. And then another element that the Pasuk describes is that they were Pneim ish el achiv, that their faces were turned one to another. And there's a beautiful vart that was imparted to us by Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan Spector, the great Kovner Rav, who was one of the main leaders of Klal Yisrael. It's said that his picture, his painting, was found in every Jewish home, every from Jewish home in Russia, in Eastern Europe, throughout his lifetime. He was very beloved by Klal Yisrael, the Kovner Rav, a gain in learning and chesed. And he says such a magnificent idea on this pasuk. He says that the Kruvim symbolize what a Yid is supposed to be. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not just telling us how he wants these figures atop the Arin to be, but he's telling us more deeply what he wants us to be. The Kruvim were Parsei Knafayim L'malo. They had wingspans, and they were trying to soar high, to deepen their Avedis Hashem, to get closer and closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's of primary importance to a Yid. A Yid has to be able to always try to get a closer relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to feel an internal love and a yira, a reverence, an awe, a closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'ani kirvas elikim li taiv. David HaMelech said in Tehillim that for me, you want to know what my definition of good is? Other people might define good as something that they eat, that they enjoy, a type of entertainment that they enjoy, a type of activity that they enjoy, a hobby that they thrill in. V'ani, personally, says David HaMelech, kirvas elikim li taiv. You know what I enjoy? What's good by me is getting closer and closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So a Yid has to have these wings that allow us to soar ever higher. We have to be able to be parsech nafayim lamala. We have to have a wingspan that allows us to flutter and to spread our wings so that we're able to achieve great heights in our avodas Hashem, in our ava, in our yira. But that alone is not enough for a Yid. A Yid is not just a person who is only focused on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, bilti l'Hashem levadei, all I do all day is just focus on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That should be a major theme of my life, but if that's your entire life, then you're missing another major facet of what a Yid is. Besides for Parsei Chnafayim L'mala, a Yid also has to have Upneim Ish Al Achiv. You have to always have a set of eyes on your neighbor, on your friend, on your chavrusa, on your spouse, on your children, on your parents, on people around you. Upneim ish el achiv. A Yid has to balance the never-ending striving of getting closer and closer to the Shechina, to the Rabbeinu Shleilam, in our davening, in our tefillah, through our mitzvahs, through our munas chachamim, all of that is something that we're getting greater and greater day by day. Through doing the Avedas Hashem, we're getting closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no doubt. But that can never come at the price, at the expense of abandoning our fellow man. We have to be also upnei mishalach. We have to look to our friends and see how we can help them. There are very different types of yidden. Some yidden are very consumed with their Avedas Hashem. And that's amazing. We admire people that are very into their davening and very into their learning. But unfortunately, sometimes when it comes to the Bein Adam L'Chaveiroi, they feel that, well, I'm so busy getting close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm so busy being in the heavens that I don't need to be here down on earth. So I don't have to worry about other people. I don't have to worry about making sure that other people are doing well in their Avedis Hashem, Baruchnius, Begashmius. I don't have to, that's not my concern. Let other people worry about that. I am so busy with my learning that I don't have to concern myself with the pedestrian affairs of other people. That's not good. A person has to always focus on the Bein Adam L'Chaveiroi as well as the Bein Adam. There's another type of Yid that's focused Bein Adam L'Chaveiroi. They're very good with their chesed, and they're very good with taking care of another person, and they're very good with their midas, which is also very admirable, super admirable. But very often it comes at the expense of not being so into their Avedas Hashem. So yes, they'll volunteer to do certain things, and they'll be very good with other people, but when it comes to serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they're not so into that. They don't wake up for davening. They don't learn every day. They don't have the Yir Shamayim that they need. So the ideal Yid is somebody that's able to balance, like the Kruvim, the wingspan, the soaring heavenward, and at the same time, being able to stay very focused, very grounded on the people around us. Like the Sulam of Yaakov Avinu, that was Roishai Mutzav Arza, that the head of the ladder was the base of the ladder, rather, was on the ground, for Roshe Magia Shamayma, and the head of the ladder was in Shamayim. You have to be grounded on planet Earth. You have to be normal. You have to be a mensch. You have to be a human being. And at the same time, while you're a human being, you have to also be soaring and aspiring for greatness and getting closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not a stira. A person can be both grounded firmly on this world and be a normal husband, a normal father, a normal friend, a normal chavrusa, a good functional human being, a person that's a mensch at work and a mensch at home. And at the same time, he's able to have his own space and be mispided with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, get close with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, have conversations with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in davening and in learning and in everything that he does, always have HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the front burner, and also his friends on the front burner. Neither of them should be able to come at the expense of the other. I wanted just to be meisif on this beautiful yisayit of Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan with one idea that the pasuk, if I'm reading it correctly, seems to be saying, at least to my ears, that when a person is parsei chanafayim lamatla, when a person is able to attain greatness in avedas Hashem bein adam lamakim, it's only valuable if at the same time it's pnei mishalachiv, meaning if the mitzvah that you're doing is directly at the expense of other people, you're treading on another person in your quest to get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then that's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. The value of being parsei chanafayim lamalo, this value of being great with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is only good to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He only values it, he only desires it, he only wants it if there is the prerequisite, if there is the understanding that you're pnei mishalachiv, that you're at the same time worrying and caring about somebody else, if you're Avedas Hashem comes at the expense of somebody else, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, that's not what I want. The person who really epitomizes this is Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was, of course, the father of the Musar movement. He was a brilliant, brilliant Talmud Chacham. And he saw that there was a need in Klal Yisrael for Musar. A few weeks ago in Avad, I think it was his yard site, we spoke about a few milas of Rissal Salanter and where he got this initiative to start this Musar movement that would spread rapidly throughout Europe in the yeshivas and to balabatim to learn everyday Musar b'islavas, to be able to really be excited and enthusiastic about learning Musar in a way that would change a person to their core, that their midas would change. He was once at a chasana. This is how legend has it. And there was a chasna that a shoemaker was making for his daughter. But this wasn't an ordinary shoemaker. This was a shoemaker who had struck it rich. Somehow, I don't know if he won the lottery or he was able to, you know, go from being a shoemaker to suddenly parlaying that to an empire of making, maybe buying a shoe factory. I don't know what he did. But he became very, very wealthy. But he had humble beginnings. He was a shoemaker, and he was making a beautiful, lavish chasna for his daughter. And he pulled out all the stops, and he made it in the fanciest hall with the most delicious food and the beautiful band, the music, the musicians, the singers, everything was there. And he was very proudly walking his daughter with his wife down the chuppah, down to the chuppah. And there was a yid in the audience that was very, jealous that this simple shoemaker had attained such wealth, such affluence, that he was able to make such a beautiful chasna. He, of course, had a wonderful new son-in-law that he was no doubt going to support in learning for many years. And it didn't sit well with one of these people in the audience. And what he did was, at this moment, at this holy moment, that this father was walking his daughter down the aisle, this person takes off his shoe, and he says, Reb Chaim, saying to the father of the bride, how much would it cost to replace this sole? The sole of the shoe, my shoe is a little worn out. How much would you charge me to replace the sole? And you can imagine the bizyanis that the father of the bride had as he was walking his daughter down the aisle. This is what he needed to hear. Somebody being mevazahim, you know, reminding him of his humble beginnings and bringing him down at this moment that he was supposed to be on the most highest of levels. Who was in the audience? Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was at that chasna. And he was eyewitness to this horrible episode. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, if this is what a yid could be, if this is how morally repugnant a human being could become, we have to do something to change Klal Yisrael. This cannot stand. And he thought long and hard, and he said, I'm going to start this Musar movement. And he did. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter wasn't just the person that preached, but he practiced what he preached. He was the perfect human being in terms of his midas and in terms of this ability to balance the soaring to heaven and at the same time the being a mensch to somebody else. I'll give you a few stories to illustrate this in Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's life. They're all sort of similar, but equally inspirational, at least in my humble estimation. One story is that he was at a chasana and he was going to wash to make hametzi. And in the olden days, they didn't have, like we have, indoor plumbing that you're able to go to a sink and just turn it on and there's endless amounts of water coming out of the tap. In the olden days, they had a keg, like a big barrel of water, and there was a little spout on the bottom, like a little faucet on the bottom, and you would put your cup under it and you would open up the faucet and then you would shut it and then you would wash your hands. And this is what people were doing, like we have at our chasas. People lined up and they were washing their hands to make mitzi. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was a machmir. He was very machmir when it came to his mitzvahs, as you'd expect such a yid to be. But suddenly, peculiarly, he was filling up the cup, but like to a basic minimum, like whatever the shiur of netilas yadayim is, he was doing it just bitzimtzum. So maybe he filled up of the cup, the washing cup, maybe he filled it up halfway. He didn't fill it up the whole way like everybody else was doing and trying to get all the biggest shiurim of netilas yadayim. He was doing it the minimal way. And there were people around, and they were a little, you know, mystified by this. Like, why wouldn't Rabbi Yisrael Salanter be extra machmir? And they asked him, Rabbi Yisrael, like, why aren't you filling it up to the top? So he says, let's think about this a second. When this water in the barrel is depleted, what happens? The person, the schlepper, the water schlepper, the water carrier, which was like the most demeaning of positions, it was like the most labor intensive, and you didn't need any chachma to do it. And so they gave it to the schlepper of the city. He was going to have to bring this barrel down to the spring, down to the river, down to the lake, and fill it up again and bring it back up. I should be machmir. I should fill up my cup of netilas yadayim to the tippy top, to the brim, to get all the shittas, to get all the chumras on his back. If I do that and everybody does that, then he's going to have to more quickly go down and refill the barrel, schlep it back up, and again schlep it back up. He says, I'm not going to be machmir on yanim's cheshbon for somebody else to have to do manual labor and to schlep because of me. That's not going to happen. Because Rabbi Yisrael understood that as chashuv as it is to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be parsech and afayim lamala, but you always have to have pnei mishalachav. You always have to have at the same time an eye to understanding what the human toll is going to be as a result of my frumkeit. If my frumkeit is going to be able to stand alone, if there's a sink, and I'm going to be able to have endless supplies of water coming out of that sink, which is, by the way, something we should be makir tayv to every day, that we have something called indoor plumbing. In the olden days, like I said, not only was there no indoor plumbing for the sinks, there was no indoor plumbing for bathrooms. And a person, if they wanted to relieve themselves, they have to go to an outhouse in the freezing cold in the winter and the boiling heat in the summer. And it was a big ordeal. There was no plumbing. It was a very big thing. It was a very big deal. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the luxury of having indoor plumbing. That's something that we can't take for granted. But it's okay. You want to be machmir gezunte, fill up your cup. Beautiful. But when there's somebody else that's going to have to pay the price because of your frumkeit, that's something that we don't do. This is actually a part that the Chavetz Chaim says by Avram Avinu. It says that Avram Avinu said to Melech Sadaim, "Imichut v'atzreich now." I don't want to take anything of the booty after Avram Avinu destroyed the five kings and he took all the booty and Melech Sadaim took it and Melech Sadaim offered the booty to Avram Avinu. He says, no, I don't want to take anything. Nobody should say that they made Avram Avinu wealthy. But then he says, Bil Adai, Rak Hana'ar Mashar Iti, Heim Yikul Chalkam. I have a team with me. I wasn't alone fighting the battle. I have other people with me. There was Eliezer or hundreds of people that came with Avram Avinu to fight the battle, whoever it was that Avram Avinu was referring to, he says, they should get their chelek. Meaning, I'm not taking anything from the booty myself, but the people with me, they should. If you look in the Chavetz Chaim HaTayr, he says this part, he says, you could be machmir on yourself, Avram Avinu, you want to set the bar very high for yourself, you want to make sure that you're not taking anything, nobody's going to say that you made Avraham Avinu wealthy, gezunte. That's for you, that's your decision. But don't impose that frumkeit on other people. The people with you, they fought the battle, they were meiser nefesh, they schwitzed, they risked their life. They're entitled to take whatever they want. That's not for me to impose on them. I can't impose my chumras on somebody else. If I want to be machmir for myself, beautiful. But make sure that as you're being parsech and afayim lamala, it's not going to come at the expense of somebody else. Don't do something that's from if it's going to hurt somebody else in the process. Because then it's not from. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want us to be extra machmir at the expense of somebody else. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter used to say another thing, that when he was making shmurah matzahs. So he would go to the matzah bakery, and he would be, let's say, the head of the chabura. If anyone's ever been to a matzah bakery, they have, like almanas generally, working widows that are working. They're the ones that are kneading the dough, and they're rolling the pins, and they have other people putting the dough into the ovens and taking it out of the oven. It has to be done very quickly, expeditiously, 18 minutes. And they asked Rabbi Yisrael Salanty, who was the head of, he was overseeing this chabura of shmur matzahs. They're asking him, Rebbe, what's the kavana that we have to have? What's your, like, kavana when we're making matzahs? Is it Zeich Lisias Mitzrayim? Is it Akar Satayb? Is it Chipazin? What tell us a yisai that we should think about as we're baking our shmur matzahs? What should be our haicha kavanas, our deep, profound, elevated kavanas? He says, I'll tell you what your kavana should be. That when you're baking the shmur matzahs, and there are these almanas and yisaimim that are the ones that are rolling the things, and people are tempted to scream at them, you know, hurry up, we got to get into the oven on time, and they're oppressing them, and they're being over the lav of kol yasim almana leisan, and don't oppress the widow and the orphan, be nice to them, be kind to them. That's my kavana. My kavana is that when I'm baking matzahs, I'm not going to step, I'm not going to trample upon the widows and the orphans that are busy rolling out the matzahs. That's not what I'm going to do. That's my kavana. My kavana is, as I'm baking the matzahs, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to bake shmur matzahs. That's fine. Beautiful. And I want to be very machmir. But not on the expense of these seven almanas. They start screaming at them, hurry up, and you're doing it too slow, and we're going to get somebody else, and all of these oppressive lines, abusive lines that people are saying, and they think it's okay. I'm making shmur matzah. So everything, it all's fair. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. It's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. That's the kavana that Rishal Salanter had as he was baking shmur matzahs. You have to be parsech and afayim, but not if it's at the expense of pnei mishal alach. If it's only valuable, the mitzvahs that we do are only valuable if it's done through the constant reminder and carefulness that we're not going to hurt somebody else in the process. There's so many of these stories. This is like Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's life. This is his life. They asked him once what his kavanah is when he was wrapping himself in his talis. What's your kavanah when he's your wrap? Is it dalat kanfes? Is it kibbutz galias? Is it the mitzvahs of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Risa meis ischartem? What's your kavanah as you're wrapping yourself? My kavanah when I'm wrapping myself in my talis that I shouldn't hit with my tzitzis somebody behind me in the eye. Wrapping yourself in your talis, you lisate patzitzis, and boom, how many times has that happened? You're standing behind somebody, and boom, the guy's tzitzis goes flying in your eye. Happens. Happens a lot. Because you're not careful. You're so busy in your zeal, in your zrizas to do mitzvahs. It's beautiful. It's beautiful if there's no human toll. There's no collateral damage as a result of what you're doing. If you're not doing something that is Bein Adam L'Chaveroi, then the Bein Adam L'Amakim becomes cheapened. He was once in Germany, davening in a shul on Yom Kippur, and they didn't have air conditioning back then. It's another thing we have to have a karsatai for. We don't understand what life was like. Maybe you do understand. If you're ever in a place that doesn't have air conditioning, for a few minutes, you go crazy, right? If the air conditioner, let's say this was the midsummer and the air conditioner broke, all you'd be thinking about right now is, the air conditioning is broken. How could I can't stay here. It's impossible. I'm going to get sick. In the old days, that's what life was like. If you lived in a hot climate, you know, there's no air conditioning. They didn't have that invention yet. So in Germany, Yom Kippur time was very hot. And what they did was, instead of having air conditioning, they had some doors of the shul, like side doors that were open just for cross ventilation. So you should have some breeze come into this hot room. And it was a packed shul. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was davening in that shul, and a Talmud of his came, like during Shemana Esrei, he walked into the shul, and he started davening in Shemana Esrei, and he was blocking one of these side doors with cross ventilation. Davening Shemana Esrei. In the middle of his own Shemana Esrei, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter stops, and he walks over to his Talmud, and he said to him, You're blocking the doorway. And the Talmud understood that he's supposed to move out of the out of the doorway, even in the middle of his own Shemoneh Esrei, and Rabbi Yisrael Salander did that himself. And afterwards, Rabbi Yisrael Salander told him, he says, what right do you have? You're stealing on Yom Kippur from everybody in the shul. Everybody in the shul wants to be comfortable. You're blocking the airflow, and you think that that's from. You think that that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. You think HaKadosh Baruch Hu really wants that you should be able to daven your Heilige Shemoneh Esrei when you're blocking other people. Where's your Ben Adam L'Chaveiro? And these are the lessons of Rabbi Yisrael Salant. This is what Rabbi Yisrael Salant used to live. That no matter what you do in life, you should soar. You should be so close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but be careful that you're not going to shtare somebody else. Don't shtare other people. And we find it a lot. We find, you know, if we have eyes open to things that other people are doing or things, more importantly, than we're doing, we find that sometimes we're not so careful about other people because we're so careful about our own frumkeit. I'll just give you a few examples that are coming to me as I'm speaking. I didn't really even think about this beforehand. But like waking up in the morning for Shacharis, it's very important to come to davening on time. And it's very important to come even earlier if you can, so you're there on time, you know, for learning a little bit or doing the daf or whatever it is. But it's important to wake up early. But you have to be very careful as you're waking up to be as quiet as you possibly can so that your roommates are not going to be woken as well. I'm not saying that, you know, they shouldn't be getting up at davening time, but if you're getting up early, let's say, or you're coming into the room late at night because you were a masman, you learned until 2 o'clock in the morning, beautiful, wonderful. But you have to be very careful when you're coming into the room, you know, not to, of course, open the light, not to, you know, make loud noises, not to turn on, you know, music or listen to a shir. Like, what are you doing? Like, hello, this is, people are sleeping. You have a roommate that's sleeping. You have to be very, very careful. So, but what do you mean? I'm listening to a shir. What do you mean? But I was a masmid. I'm going to davening. Fine. That's wonderful. And of course, you should go to davening. You shouldn't like say, okay, you know what? We're going to sleep till 10 because I don't want to wake up my roommate. I don't, you know, that's not the point. But a person should be very nizer in Gezel Shina in the morning and at night and in disturbing people. You have to be careful. You have to be sensitive to other people. You can't tread on other people on your while you're racing to do a mitzvah, while you're racing to get HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Avayda done, you have to be very careful. Do not trample on somebody else. Don't trample on somebody else. We find this, by the way, the same concept. Also, it's a Vayakal Pekude type of idea in that it discusses, it's talking about the Big Day Kayin Gadol. The Big Day Kayin Gadol had a Me'il, one of the Shemayna Begadim is a Me'il, the coat, the beautiful coat that the Kohen Gadol wore. And on the bottom of the Me'il, there were alternating bells and pomegranates. Pamein v'rimein, pamein v'rimein. Al shuleha Me'il saviv. Surrounding the bottom, the hem of the garment, there was accentuating motifs of a bell and a pomegranate. And the bells actually rang. They made noise. And the Pasuk describes that the reason why the bells had noise, made noise, was that it should be that it should be heard, its sound should be heard upon entering the Heichal before Hashem. V'nishma koylai b'bayel ha-kodesh. That when the Kohen comes in to the Azara, his sound should be heard. It should be heard. What does that mean? A sound should be heard. So if you look in the Chazal and the Ramban, they say that the reason for these bells that v'nishma kail b'vayel ha-kodesh is that it should be as if you're asking permission to come in. You don't just go into a place without asking permission. You have to make sure that you are getting permission. You're getting reshus before you come in. So by the bells going off, the bell was like sort of like a doorbell that the Kohen Gadol would ring every single time. He's walking into the Heichal, walking into the Azara, ding-dong, you ask permission. You don't just barge in. It's Hashem's home. You don't just go into your house. You have to first make sure that you have permission from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You take a step, another permission, another permission. You're going to the menorah, you're going to the shulchan, you're going to the mizbeach. Whatever you're doing, it has to be bereshus. And that's the lesson that we're supposed to take. The Kohen Gadol, is there a bigger parsech and afayim lamal than the Kohen Gadol? Was there a person on the universe that was closer to the Shekhinah, that was doing things that the malachim, the angels, weren't allowed? Bezois yavei Aaron el HaKadosh. Aaron is able to come in, but the malachim are not able to come into the Kadosh. Aaron HaKohen was a human angel. Ki sifsei Kohen yishmeru das, ki malach Hashem tzvakusu. A Kohen was an angel. He was angelic. He was a literal kruv. But you have to pnei mishalachiv. You have to remember, you don't barge in. You're a human being. You don't barge into a place without knocking. You ask permission before you go in. And that's halacha. We have to do that as well. You don't walk into a room until you knock. You want to come into your own house, you have a key. That's very nice to have a key. You have to knock before you come in. You have a dorm room, somebody might be getting undressed. Somebody might be doing something that's private. You have to knock and then walk in after you give warning that you're here. You have to announce yourself. That's learned from this halacha. V'nishma kailai b'vayel ha-kaidish, which means to say that before you go anywhere, you have to ask permission. You can't assume that you have the license to go anywhere unless you ask permission. Whenever I say over this Ramban, I always say it with a story that that a friend of mine, a good friend of mine, experienced with Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach when we were in Kol Torah together. Some people do not like this story at all because it doesn't fit the expectation, the profile, the legend of Rav Shlomo Zalman. I like it. I think it's the nicest Rav Shlomo Zalman story of all of them. Rav Shlomo Zalman was known to be the kindest, biggest tzaddik, always smiling, chesed, rachel. Rav Shlomo Zalman was the epitome of Ben Adam L'Chaveray, besides for his Ben Adam L'Makom, of course. And this story is not a steerer to that, but this story teaches us an important lesson. So my friend had a job in yeshiva and Kol Torah. It's a job that I actually yarshin from him after he finished the shir of Shlomo Zalman, the end of this month. By the next month, I took over this very position. And that is that after shir was over, he would go over to Rav Shlomo Zalman. Rav Shlomo Zalman would give him the keys to his office, which was on the other side of the yeshiva building, and his notes, his machteris. He had a notebook of his chidushim that he would use during shir. So you would take those two things, run to the office, open up the key to the office, the door to the office with the key, put the machteris on Rav Shlomo Zalman's table, get Rav Shlomo Zalman's beautiful Yerushalmi hat, and then lock the office and bring it to him as he was walking through the halls to go to the Beis Medrash for Mincha. That was the job. And so my friend one day went over to Rav Shlomo Zalman after shir, and Rav Shlomo Zalman was like fishing in his pocket for the keys, and he couldn't find them. They weren't in his pants, they weren't in his jacket, they weren't, and he was getting a little bit, you know, nervous, as we all do when we lose keys. It's a tircha to have to like, you know, try to find them and make new ones. And I think he had his house key on there, he had the office key and maybe a few others, I think. So anyway, he couldn't find it. He was getting a little bit agitated. And my friend said, maybe the Rashiva left it in the office. So he said, okay. So he runs to the office. The door happened to have been open, Baruch Hashem. And he looked on the desk, Rav Shlomo Zalman's desk, it wasn't there. He looked under the desk, it wasn't there. He looked, on the couch, the seat, it wasn't there. He sees Rav Shlomo Zalman's coat hanging on the hook. There was like pegs in the wall, and it's hanging on the hook. So he figured he probably left it in his coat pocket. So he put his hand in the coat pocket, and sure enough, that's where the keys were. He was so happy, my friend, that he found Rav Shlomo Zalman's keys, and he ran to the reshiva as he was walking in the hall. He like slid on the marble up to the reshiva's, and he said, "Matzati et ha-maftechot, I found the keys." Shlomo Zalman was beaming. Baruch Hashem, says, where were they? Were they on the desk? No, no, they weren't on the desk. On the floor? No, they weren't on the floor. They were in the chair? No, couch? No. So where were the keys? He says they were in the Rosh Yeshiva's coat pocket. At that point, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman's smile dissolved, deflated. It became a frown. It became like there was something bothering in the Rosh Yeshiva. And he says, "What did you just say?" He says, "Did you said that you put your hand in my coat pocket?" He says, "Yeah, and that's where the key. Did I give you permission to take your hand and to put it into my coat pocket? Did I give you that rishus?" My friend told me at this time he would, if he had a shovel, he'd literally dig his own grave there. It would be easier. He says, and then Rav Shlomo Zalman said, he says, "Did you maybe take my wallet from my pocket also when you put your hand in there?" Rav Shlomo Zalman wasn't trying to shtach him. He was teaching him a lesson. And I think he was teaching all of us a lesson. You're not going to see the story in any books. So it doesn't fit, right? That's not Rav Shlomo Zalman. There's no more beautiful story of being mechanech, a Talmud, than this. The Aleph Beis of being a Yid is not about davening, and it's not about learning, and it's not about, it's being a mensch. And part of being a mensch is, even if you're the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippurim, or the Kohen Gadol on any day of the year, and you're Parsei Chanafayim L'mal, and you're soaring, you're doing something that you feel is amazing. You're going and you're finding the Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Shlomo Zalman, the Gadol Hadar, the Pesach Hadar's keys, and doing a chesed for him. And that's an amazing thing. That's something that's godly. But there's always that the point that you have to stop yourself and say, "Wait a minute, I don't have rishus to do this. This is not something that I have the right to do." There's a line, there's an invisible line of demarcation that before I do anything, I always have to filter in my mind halacha and menschlichkeit. Is this going to be a good idea for me to do? And if it is, fine. But if it's not, you can't do it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want you to do it. The ends do not justify the means. If you have rishus to go and put, it's a good idea to put your hands in somebody's coat pocket to give, you think you're helping, but you're not helping. That's not what you're allowed to do. You're overstepping your bounds. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want that type of Hashavas Aveidah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want it if you're doing it in a way that's krum, in a way that's not appropriate. It's a beautiful lesson. Rav Shlomo Zalman was a master of understanding of how to balance things. Rav Shlomo Zalman was a perfect Balmidas. There was a story that's told that there was an almana, and this almana was... she had Yisaimim, her husband died, a young almana, she had young children, and she had some money that she had, Birusha, from her husband, and she wanted to make something. She didn't have a lot of money, but she had a certain amount of money set aside. She said, "I want to do something special for my husband's Zikaron. So I'm thinking maybe of dedicating some Svarim to the local shul, or maybe dedicating a Ner Tamid in a new shul that's being built, or a cheder in a room in a new cheder that's being that they want a dedication for. What should I do with the money?" She asked Rav Shlomo Zalman. He said, "I'll tell you what to do with the money. You take that money, you buy toys for your children, and you buy good snacks for your children, and you let them enjoy a little bit life. Try to get their minds off the loss of their father. That's what you should be doing with the money." Because Rav Shlomo Zalman understood that, yes, of course, it's important to be Parsei Chanafayim L'mal, but always with an eye of Pnei Mishal Achav. That takes precedence. That takes precedence only on the condition. That's how you read the Pasuk. But only on the condition of Pnei Mishal Achav. Make sure that there's always an eye towards another human being. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. When he made this world, he didn't make just one person in the world. He made a world full of people. And with this world, with the society, the community that we're living in, the family structure that we're living in, the yeshiva structure that we're living in, there's always other people that are needy. And yes, we have to learn, and yes, we have to daven, but if there's other people that need our help in any which way, that's our avaida, that's our mission. And almost it takes precedence. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a famous tshuva about how much time you're supposed to dedicate to people that need it. If let's say there are people in yeshiva that need to they're not getting shir, they're not understanding the Gemara, they're weaker than you are. Let's say there are people, Ramesh didn't speak about this, but I think it's safe to maybe extend it, not b'negei his tshuva, that I'm going to continue soon, but like, there's a guy in physics that isn't chopping it. There's a guy in chemistry. There's a guy in algebra. There's a guy in, I don't know, whatever it is, organic chemistry. And they're not getting it like you're getting it. So you have to spend time with them also. If you have the time, you have to spend time. Ramesh was asked, how much time should we spend? And Ramesh says, he didn't say it with a certainty, but he says that, I forgot the exact lashon, but he said that a lashon like, perhaps you have to take meiser. You didn't want to issue it as a psak, but maybe if let's say you're spending, 10 hours a day learning, you have to spend 1 hour of those 10 hours with somebody else, helping somebody else. It's not going to take away from your learning. If you spend time with somebody that Shvach and the Yakadosh Baruch Hu will give you kefal keflayim of the chachma that you think you're really getting from not helping other people. Just like meiser is asher b'sfilshu desad, you take meiser money. It's a hard thing to do. You know, if you made $10, not so hard to give away a dollar. If you're making $1 million, pretty hard to give away $100,000. But and you think I need the money myself. You know, I made $100,000. I give $10,000. I could really use that money. Bakash Bro says, you give that $10,000, I'll make it $100,000. I once heard a speech by a big philanthropist. In California, a very famous gevir, like a person that gives millions and millions of dollars. He says, I want to tell you something, a secret that I had in business and my success. The guy's probably a billionaire today, young guy. He's not young anymore, but he was young. He was a billionaire already when he was younger. He's my age, actually. I went to yeshiva with him. He's a few years younger than me. But he said, I'll tell you the secret to success. He says, how much money do you want to make this year? You want to make $100,000 this year? Give $10,000 to the tzaddik beforehand. Whatever, he says, this works by me. He says, whatever you want to make this year, give meiser of it at the beginning of the year. You'll see that that Kadosh Baruch will give you that much. That much. He'll give you 10 times, he'll 10x whatever you're given. You want to make $1 million, give $100,000, obviously assuming that you can afford it. But this is a trick that you have to be able to understand that whatever you're giving, you're really going to get back much more. When you're helping somebody that needs it, don't think, well, I need to be a Talmud Chacham myself. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give you the Chachma, the extra Chachma that you'll need by helping other people. It's very important to learn, but help other people learn also. It's very important to earn a Parnassah. Help somebody else find the Parnassah. It's very important. Whatever you're doing is important. All of your Parsech and Afayim is of primary importance. This shmuz is not about diminishing the Parsech and Afayim. It's raising the Khanafayim. You'll soar much higher when you're aware of the fact that there is another yid next to you that needs your help in whatever way that he does. You can't trample on him. But more than that, not only can you ignore you have to help that person. And the helping is the greatest form of Parsech and Afayim. The way that you'll steig, the way that you'll grow, the way that you'll soar is by taking other people with you on your coattails, by bringing up more people, being makara people, kirev krivim, kirev rechaikim, whatever you're doing in life, by pnei mishal achiv, that will, in effect, be the greatest form of being parsech and afayim lamalo. Your ruchnius will not in any way suffer, fakert. Your ruchnius will advance quicker than you could ever imagine if you're aware of the fact that there are people around you that need you beruchnius, need you begashmius, those are the people that are successful, people that find this balance of being, as they say in Yiddish, some gut and some light to God and to people. You have to be ve'enei elikim ba'adam. You have to be fine. V'nimtzachem v'seichel ta'iv ve'enei elikim ba'adam. You have to find favor and goodness in the eyes of Hashem, but also in the eyes of your fellow human being. It's Hashem, we should be zeichet to go mechayel ol chayel and to grow beruchnius, parsin chnafayim lamala, but always, always with our eyes and our fellow yidden, being pneim ishal achiv, to be able to be fully aware, like those kruvim, that there are other people who we have to face and whose eyes are looking towards us for assistance. Have a good Shabbos.